All right. Hey, what's going on? It's Bill Burr, and this is once again time for a very special Monday morning podcast. You get an extra one this week. And as always, whenever I do that, you know, it's not just going to be me running my mouth. I always have a great guest, and this time is no exception. Please welcome the multi-talented, the multi-business-owning from Entourage, Jerry Ferrara, man.
I don't think there's any way I could live up to that introduction
what are you talking
that you
about,
just
dude?
Gave me.
You're one of the guys that, like, when I found out you were co-owner of that Fat Sal's.
Oh, yeah.
Which is this great sandwich place out here. When I found out that you were one of the co-owners, I was telling my wife, I'm like, see, that's what most artists don't do. They have all their eggs in one basket. I love the fact that you're making money outside of this fucked up business. So
I joke with my brother all the time. It's like, I hope one day when I'm in my 60s, you look back and be like, you know, acting was great. We did great, but you know what we really killed?
Yeah.
Sandwiches. That's, you know, where
what? You
really
know why I ate there? I ate there because of your slogan.
Is that right?
It says Sal's, and then underneath it, it says, we're making sandwiches over here.
Oh, my God. The guys, when they hear this, the guys at Fat Sal's are going to die. They're proud of that slogan.
No, I laugh. When me and my wife saw it, we laughed. We're like, we got to try that place. So, of course, I tried it out, and it's awesome, but I'm 46, so I can only eat there so often.
But, I close my eyes when I drive past sometimes. I only want to look at it because it's on the way to the gym. So, it's like, I drive home, I got to pass it every day. I'm like, you just worked out. Don't blow it.
Yeah, it's on Fountain. On Fountain, then you got the big flat-screen TVs. You always got the game on. It's unreal. It's like, for someone like me, that's literally a moth going to the light. But the reason you're here is you have a new podcast coming out called Bad for Business.
Yeah, it's 3 weeks old, and it's Bad for Business because I really don't know what the hell I'm doing. So,
okay.
I've been listening.
I didn't know what the hell I was
I've
doing.
I've been listening to you, obviously, for a while now, and I grew up listening to sports talk radio. I didn't have a TV in my room, so, like, was all I had, Stern, all those things. So I just have had an affinity for radio my whole life.
Where did you grow up?
Bensonhurst, Brooklyn.
All right. Oh, God. What sport affiliations are you?
All right. You want to know? Well, you know Knicks, obviously.
The Knicks, I don't got a problem with that.
We saw that.
I don't know about the Knicks. Go ahead.
Yankees.
Yankees. You made the right choice.
And what could you say now, though? You can't even really say anything anymore. What could you say?
What do you mean by that, Jerry?
Like, you're golden. You're good.
Oh. I thought you were going to say that we're doing exactly what the fuck you guys were doing with buying up everybody.
No, I don't think so. Yankees,
no,
Giants.
We did in 07.
And look, the minute
07 was a disgrace.
The minute we gave Jacoby Ellsbury money, to me, it's over. The rivalry's over. The minute it started with Damon a little bit, like, that was Yankees signed Damon. It kind of ruined the whole
thing. They always go your way, though. They never come our way. They always, all throughout my life, all the way back to guys like Bob Watson. There was always just guys we let go, and you guys always signed them. But I don't ever remember anybody, you know, even like an old Lou Piniella. We never got anybody.
You never got the old Lou Piniella or even like Mike Pagliarulo.
Even like a Rick Cerrone, who was really an Indian, like, coming our way. It always seems like they always end up, yeah.
You might have got one guy, Andy Hawkins, who I remember, the only Yankee. I remember he used to buy the helmets. Carvel used to give an ice cream scoop in the little mini batting helmets.
I remember that, yeah.
And I used to watch Yankee games, and I'd write on the sticker, and I'd put the stats of the game on the back of a sticker. I still have this one helmet. Andy Hawkins threw a no-hitter and lost to the Chicago White Sox. 5 errors, 4 walks. They lost 3-0. He threw a no-hitter.
You were at that game?
No, I wasn't. I was watching with my little Carvel. I think it was on the road against the White Sox. And I think Hawkins ended up being a Red Sox for like a half a season out of the bullpen.
That sounds like the kind of guy that we'd signed. He throws a no-hitter and,
and he loses.
Still, at least back then we did. But I don't know. We're playing off. I got to tell you, the Johnny Damon, that was brutal. And even though I know he was Kansas City, and then he was in Oakland, and then we got him. So I understood. You know, there was just something about, like, we finally beat you guys, and that he was such, like, the poster child of our team. And then just to watch him go get a shave and a haircut.
And get another ring.
Like, he was going over his parents' house.
He went corporate almost. It was this wild child who had one of the better beards and hair on the Red Sox. Like, he had, his beard was phenomenal.
Right.
And he had, like, 7 RBIs in that game 7.
He hit the grand slam.
Yeah, he had, like, 7 RBIs. So yeah, that ruined it for me. Like that really hurt the Red Sox Yankee rivalry. Like my fondest memory, the ending would be like Pedro Martinez throwing Don Zimmer on the ground. That was when it was at. For me, growing, that was the height. That was the height.
Now, did that piss you off when that happened, or did you understand?
It made me so angry. And then
let me ask you this, Jerry: What the fuck was he supposed to do? He's got this old guy running at him. All right, he's got these are his options.
He was in the no win.
Either he runs away from an old guy. Okay, that's one. Two, he punches him in the face. Can't do that.
Cannot do that.
Or you gently take him by the side of his head. I feel bad now because he just passed away.
I know.
And you just sort of guide him to the ground. That's what he did.
He was in a no-win situation. There's no way on earth he comes out of that where it's like, Pedro, you did the right thing. He had no shot. He was the minute Zimmer planted his feet and charged, Pedro Martinez was in trouble.
Still was not a was not a good moment. So then football, where are you going in football?
Giants.
Congratulations.
Giants. I remember the greatest day of my life was when the Giants beat the Niners in the NFC Championship game. The Leonard Marshall sack knocked Montana out. Giants winning a
almost
field
ended
goal.
His career.
Almost ended his career. And then my uncle took me to see Home Alone in the movie theater. Greatest day of my childhood.
Do you know Paul Verzi? You got to meet him.
I know that.
He opens for me a lot.
Is
you
that
guys
what it is? I definitely know him.
You like Paul Verzi with hair. I just did that for him if he's listening. You know what's funny? Like back in the day when Entourage was first coming out, for people who don't know Jerry by name, he played Turtle on Entourage. Do you know I actually auditioned for that?
Did you for Turtle?
That's how wide the casting net was before they ended.
They were throwing darts.
Yeah, no, and they got you. It totally made sense. But, I was, not like I'm good now, but I was really bad at auditioning back then. And it was a memorable, awful one. I can't remember because it was so bad or because the show went on to be a hit. So there was, like, the first season and a half, I'm watching it going, like, God, every time they'd say your character's name, like, I would just sort of think about that bad audition going, ah, geez.
Son of a bitch.
I haven't been back. I have not been back since. But what's the deal with that, man? I got information here that maybe there's going to be a movie.
No. We just wrapped the movie a month ago. We actually had to postpone shooting. Kevin Connolly, one of the guys, he plays Eric on the show, broke his leg while we were shooting.
Doing what?
I was kind of a part of it. I've actually now told the story a few times, but it was a party scene at the beach, and we had a cameo from Russell Wilson. So, and I knew this was going to happen. They wanted to do a little montage of us, playing a little tackle football on the beach.
Oh, no.
And I begged. I said, let's figure out what we're going to do. Let's block it out a little bit. Worst thing to do to two competitive, below average athletically guys
is he competitive?
To say, oh, yeah, him and I, is to say, hey, let's just turn the camera on and see what happens. And sure enough, I go out. He drills me. He goes out. I tackle on like the third play. It was actually the most harmless one of it all. I wrapped him up. He like tried to dive and extend the ball
like
over the
Bo
goal
Jackson.
Line, and just his leg broke in two places.
Did you hear it? You heard it snap?
I heard something weird. It wasn't like the Paul George awfulness. It was not that, thank God. But I heard a little something.
Did he?
He didn't know. He popped up and he thought he sprained his ankle. Russell Wilson came over and said, "Like you better tie those laces tight." And he worked for like 2 days without knowing. Just and finally, he tapped out. He's like, "Guys, I gotta go to a doctor." And they X-rayed. Like, you have a broken freaking leg. He's in surgery the next day.
What did he? Which bone?
Fibula.
Fibula. Jesus Christ.
Surgery, screws, and everything. So we had to shut down for a month. But the movie's done, and I actually just saw an early cut of it yesterday, and it's actually good.
Oh,
I'm really happy. I hate everything.
How do you deal with that, man? Like I said, the little stuff that I've done. I immediately realized how little power you have if you're just a performer. Like, I always hear a lot on set, like, yeah, it feels like it's going good. And then there's always that, yeah, man, I hope this thing comes together. Because you have no idea when you're doing it.
Nope.
I think more like the director and the people who edit it, they have an idea of the direction it's going in. But, like, I feel like if you're just acting on it, you're kind of in this vacuum where you're performing with the other people. And just hoping you're giving them what they need.
I got a few things to say about that. One, I think it's like a game of opposites. Anytime I've been on a set, or even whether it was like an episode of Entourage or even a movie set or whatever it is, when everyone's like, God, this is great. This feels great, right? Everyone's killing it. This is what Bill's killing it. Jerry's killing it. And then you watch it and it's kind of, eh. And then I've been on set when there's been times like, I don't want to have any idea if this shit's working. This is the weirdest shit we've ever done. I'm like crossing fingers, and you watch it, and it's the it's great. So you're not supposed to know, I don't think.
That's kind of like in stand-up, the amount of times.
Is that right?
A lot of times you feel like you're bombing. And you get off stage like, oh, that sucks. And then your buddy's out in the crowd going, dude, they were dying laughing. Just some nights you just can't, you can't hear it. But in acting, I have I have total respect for any working actor, because that just seems like the hardest. I don't know how you guys get to a point, like how you get altitude in that career, because it's so fucking competitive. Whereas like a comedian, as difficult as starting out is, once you like build a following, like say whatever, I went to an improv and I sold some tickets, like I don't have to re-audition.
No, that's it.
At the next club, it's like, okay, this guy sells tickets, so then you move up to this next level, and just, you know, provided you keep getting better, you know, you have this thing. And now you have this thing, like say, you know, I go through, you know, periods without getting any acting work, but I don't have to go back to waiting tables and all that type of stuff. Did you go through did you have any like get something really big early, and then that awful flat line for a while?
My story is interesting, and I'll give you the quickest version possible. But you know,
how sick are you telling this?
No, I'm really honestly not many. Everyone, okay. No, a lot of people think like that. I kind of just showed up out here like some meathead from Brooklyn and like got cast in Entourage right away. It was, you know, 4 or 5 years. Now look, that's a short amount of time
that's
in the grand scheme, but to
very
me,
quick.
Young and competitive, it felt like an eternity. And I lived in this, you know, in Burbank for 10 years. I worked at every restaurant.
How old were you when you came out?
19. I came out here, I did like 3 episodes of King of Queens. And I'm like, I'm staying. And so, I never left.
So you were smart enough not to go to college.
I did my 6 months at a college of Staten Island, a very nice community college back on the CSI.
You don't have big student loans.
College
either.
Of Stupid Italians, we used to say it stood for. Okay. Every kid who couldn't get into college went there. Now the school's, it's actually a great community college. I shouldn't really talk shit. But I didn't have any great success. I would get an acting job that would maybe last a month. I'd make like $7,000-$8,000, which to me was $1 million.
Oh yeah.
And I quit whatever restaurant I worked. I'd live off that for as long as I can, and then I just would go months without an acting job, and I'd go beg for my waitering job back. And that was my cycle for quite a while.
But even then, even though 5 years is quick to
it's pretty
make
quick,
it,
yeah.
But to go through that for 5 years, I mean, this town, like, you know, they talk about New York, if I can make it there, I can make it anywhere. Personally, this town for me is just way, way more, like,
it's brutal.
Bleak,
yeah,
and brutal. I always feel like New York, there's always like there's an excitement to that city, where out here, I don't know if it's just the topography, but this is like desolate out here, and that sun beating down on you, there's no change of season. It just feels like Groundhog Day, just every day.
Groundhog Day,
fucking
yeah.
Sunshine. Phone's not ringing,
you know,
I can't get anywhere in my car.
When it's great, it's the best town to ever live in. When it's bad, it's probably the worst town to ever live in. And I always tell people, I always get not offended, but like I've had a couple of people in the last whatever year or two be like, what's like the easiest way? Like, how you get into acting? Like, what's the easiest way? And I'm like, the easiest way? That's how you're gonna pose the question. There is no easy way. And it's designed to make you quit. The whole system is designed to make you say, I can't do this anymore. I'm going home. It's made to make you say that.
Well, let me ask you this. Being also a transplant from the East Coast, do you miss the East Coast? Do you see yourself ever going back? Or are you kind of settling in out here?
I've had a couple of different trajectories with this. In the beginning, I hated L.A. You know, right. Meathead from Brooklyn. My accent was 10 times worse than it is now. Then I guess as I got a little successful too, I got the whole good side of the town. The weather's great. I grew to love
it. Food's unbelievable.
It's great. You and I are sitting here. I'm drinking an iced coffee. It's great. It's great. It's great. Recently though, and within the last year, I've kind of gotten to the place where I'm going to be 35 soon. Uh-huh. You know, my family's all still back there. My nieces and nephews are growing up now. They're like, you know, 6 years old. They're starting to get that age where I could do stuff with them. I'm saying maybe I don't need to be here 11 months a year. Maybe it's 9, and maybe I go to New York for 2 months. I'm starting to get to that point. Maybe I go spend some more quality time elsewhere. Maybe I don't need to. I'm built up enough where, look, if I really blow it at this point, I'm going to have a serious problem must have happened.
Right.
So maybe I go spend some time somewhere else. I'm at that point now. It's recent.
I'm always jealous.
It's weird.
I'm jealous of you New York guys because you can go back to your hometown and it's still a big industry town.
You can't? Come on. Give me a little.
No, I would go back to the suburbs of Boston. Now, I know that they shoot some stuff up there, but it's just like if I went back there like, you know what I really miss most about living in Massachusetts is just going to a sporting event where I'm not in enemy territory. It's like I left in 95. I was in New York through the height of the curse of the babe. All of that.
That's a bad run for you.
Yeah, yeah. It was all of that and
Aaron Boone.
Aaron Boone never took hold because the very next year, like Aaron Boone probably... It definitely would have been worse than Bucky Dent had the next year not happened.
Right.
But what happened was they just sort of tore the Band-Aid off. Like, oh, my God, that sucked. Damn, we won it. Thank God. But where the Bucky Dent, the Bill Buckner thing, it just kept – like, I remember, I had a warehouse job, and it was like 2.5 years after the game. And just one day in the middle of the summer, I was just shaking my head. And my boss was, well, what's the matter? Like, he thought the count was off when I unloaded this truck. I was just like, dude, I still can't believe we fucking lost that series. And he laughed.
The ultimate delayed
and
reaction.
He laughed. No. I mean, I had the reaction and all that. But just like years later, you were just thinking about it. I imagine as much as 04 would suck for a Yankee fan, because of all that other success you've had and then you won one afterwards, it's bad, but it's not as I guess, I don't know, Cleveland fans or something like that, where it's just like, there's just no light. There's been no light.
That's bleak. But now there's not light, but at least there's a glimmer of light has poked through at LeBron and maybe Johnny Manziel. But yeah,
huge. I hope he's going to be good.
I'm on board. I think it's great. It's the new era, and there's some dinosaurs that are going to hate on him for a while. I think there's nothing wrong with
it. But what about his size and all those guys who run around? First of all, nobody's going to be faster or more elusive at the quarterback position than Mike Vick. So if he can get caught, he can get hurt. That's the only thing that I would worry about. But I'm actually a Browns fan. My parents and some other relatives have lived in Ohio.
Root for the Browns. My girlfriend's from Ohio, and I just went there for the first time recently, and they are the most passionate fans. Obviously, Boston and New York, too.
No, I'm all Boston teams, but for the Browns.
I couldn't believe.
I like the Browns because my dad liked the Browns. He grew up in Ohio and in Michigan. So
every year is going to be their year.
So he went to like Old Municipal Stadium, saw Jim Brown play and that type of thing.
God,
so
that's amazing.
So he's got this weird. I have this weird thing with him. He was a Tigers and a Cleveland Browns fan, so I have like an affinity for both of them, and a little bit with the Red Wings if their fans weren't such dicks all the time, talking all this shit. Granted, they have all those cups, but so I'm actually I'm hoping that he's gonna do well.
One of my prize followers on Twitter. I'm not good on Twitter, but Johnny Manziel follows me, and right. That is one of my prize followers. I'm most awesome. Proud of that follow.
we actually, me and my buddies, when we went to go see him last year at
when they
lost to Alabama. No, it was just a.
I'm gonna go to a Browns game. I think I'm gonna try to go October 12th. I think they're playing the Steelers. I just want to go witness. I just want to go. See what that's all about. Those fans, I just can't believe how hard they show up and root, and they haven't won more than 5 games in decades.
Yeah, they're maniacs out there.
Like maniacs.
That you would not want to walk out there with the other person's jerseys on.
I'm going to go.
Speaking of that, how do you feel about like attending sporting events out here in L.A.? I mean, I personally have not had the best experience unless you show up wearing their shit, which I'm never going to do. I dress like a plainclothes cop when I go to the game.
Same here.
But like they just take it way too fucking serious out here where there's always a little bit of that you might get stabbed. Like this,
you talking about
the
Dodger games particularly or
Chargers?
Oh,
and
yeah,
then just
yeah,
shit
yeah,
I
yeah.
hear about. Like, dude, some guy got shot at a fucking 49ers Raiders preseason.
I've never gone
preseason game.
Up to any North NorCal sports. Like, I've never been to San Fran yet since I've lived here.
Oh, okay.
I've never been to Oakland. I need to go. I want to go experience
They're storied franchises. They have great fans.
Yeah, but you're not going to the black hole watching a Raider game wearing the Charger jersey.
No, I would not. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. Although, like, I think the Raider fans took a turn for the worse when they started dressing up like characters. Back in the day, the crowd.
Wrestling characters.
Yeah, the crowd, they all looked like they were in a biker gang and they were, like, legitimately scary. But now it's like, I'm not saying, like, there's a lot of people in that stadium could fuck you up, but you got that around the league. But those stupid characters, man, with the spikes coming out, they look like they should be going to Comic-Con. They
look like the, I don't know if you remember the movie Weird Science, when like the motorcycle gang comes in at the end to crash the park. Oh, they look like those guys. That always struck me. I saw one shot of a guy who looked just like one of the Weird Science biker guys at the end.
Jesus Christ, dude, you just took me
I know, I went back. I'm sorry. I do. I've been watching a lot of old movies.
Speaking of movies... dude, you're in like insane shape right now. And I'm obviously, I asked you when you came in, the second you walked in, I had written down here that, you just signed on to play 2-time world champ Arturo Gatti in an untitled biopic, which I'm so psyched that they're making this, executive produced by Mark Wahlberg. And the second you came in, I was like, are you already shooting the movie? You're just training at this point.
I'm training now and I'm kind of getting ready. I'm not in the full swing yet. Like, we're actually going to go have a training camp. I'm going to go up to Big Bear and do that whole like 24/7 thing. No,
so
women,
you're gonna get
no
shredded.
I'm going to do my best. I personally don't, there's only a level of shred I can get. Like, there's
don't you have
midriff region that I'm Italian from, and also I was 205 pounds. We may have to CGI some shit with that. I don't know, but yeah.
Wait, how tall are you?
5'7" if I have on good shoes.
And you were 205.
204.
And what is the weight when you went to the doctor?
What?
When you went to the doctor when you were 205, and he says, listen, Jerry, I love the show. I'm not trying to be a dick, but you need to get down to what were you supposed to be?
Am I like the normal for my height?
Yeah.
The normal for my height's 150. I thought that would be
In what? The 1950s?
For 5'6" and a half, he was like 150, 155, you'll be normal. And that's actually exactly how it happened. I went to take a physical to go do a movie. It's like the Hollywood physical. They make sure you're not dying. They literally make sure your heart is beating and that you don't have any weird outward things.
They do the blood pressure thing. They look in your ear.
Like, my mom could do that physical for me if she had to. And the guy, he was being real thorough. I'm like, this guy's looking for something to, like, fail me. And he put me on the scale, and I just turned 30. It was like a week after my 30th birthday.
Right.
And, you know, the doctor wasn't trying to scare me. He's just like, look, you're not in any physical threatening, life-altering thing. Like, you're young still, but you know what? As you get closer to 40, if you go on this path, you're going to be faced with some problems. So start now. It's way easier now than when you're going to be 39
to
do it.
Trust me, dude. Trust me.
And I just started. And it's been I'm 30. I'm going to be 35 now, and I'm at 151. I'm in that range of, I guess, the proper weight for my short ass.
Congratulations, dude. That's all. And how long did it take you to drop all that?
It's just nonsense. It's still going on. It's just been years.
So,
like,
yeah, so you're doing it the right way. You're gradually. Did you do it more with diet or working out or both?
Both. But I mean, at the time, I was still smoking cigarettes. Still, I was smoking pot. Still, I quit all that.
Dude. Yeah.
And
that shit. By the way, I'm 46, right around 40, man. I'm telling you, like, there's this weird thing where at 40, if you figured you started being a knucklehead around 18, 19, there's that tipping point where for more of your life, you were being a moron than running around and riding your bicycle as a kid.
Yeah.
And all of that shit, I'm telling you, it starts like the weight just fucking takes you down. And like all of a sudden, just some of the conversations I'm having with some of my friends is just, it's what we're, I mean, unfortunately, I never let it get too out of control. I'm about 170 now. The worst I ever did, I went about 20 pounds. And dude, it was all road fucking.
Wait, you were up to 190 at one point?
Yeah, I was closing on 190. And this comic, Keith Robinson, I'm not going to say the comic's name that he called me, but he was a redhead who was fat, and he called me him that day. And it was funny as hell, but it really stung me. And I was like, all right, I got to go. Because one of the running jokes on this podcast is that I think fat shaming works if you're in a, like, I'm not trying to get in trouble making
comment or any bullshit, but it's
just like, I do that to myself. Like, I'll be looking in the mirror when I go, look what you did, you piece of shit. And I just say, nobody should love you, you know, just fucking, it gets me like, I just have an unacceptable weight. Like, I'm not fucking going past this.
Buddy, I have a photo album in my phone That's like my workout photo album. It's all old photos.
Right.
That really, if I look at it, and it's not even because I want to look a certain way. Because it's going to be what it is, bro. I'm not a pretty boy. I'm not a particularly handsome guy.
What are you talking about with your full head of hair? Go fuck yourself. But you look great.
I look at those 205 things, and that's where I'm like, that shit. I don't want to go to the gym.
Were you out of shape as a kid, or did that just happen in your adult life?
Genetically, we always had like meat on our bones, you know, and we're short guys, even my brother too. But like, I played every single sport. There was not a day that went by in my youth up until I moved out here that I didn't do something that day sports wise.
You know, it's hilarious. You're probably the only guy who ever moved out to LA in show business and put on weight. That's fine. Unless you did it for a role.
Craft service guy. I went probably from 21 to almost 30, where I did not do shit.
Except fucking.
I mean, I worked and I smoked and I ate. Yeah. That's all I did.
So when you, how old were you when you booked Entourage?
23. Close to 24.
And that ran for what, 7, 8 seasons?
8 seasons spanned across. You know, HBO does it with the year and a half break. So spanned across a decade, you know, basically, yeah. Almost a decade.
Oh, so 10 years of craft service. I mean, that's understandable.
You kidding? And then you start making a little bit of money. You could actually afford to take a lady out for a meal. It went off the rails.
Isn't that
quick.
Amazing what you used to think was a good restaurant? And then all of a sudden, you know, I used to be like, you know, like going to the Ground Round was like a big
ground
deal.
Ground Round.
Yeah. And then I made a little bit of money. And then what I thought was a good restaurant. And then the second, you know, I met my wife, then it's just like, yeah, like Jesus Christ,
everything changes.
She'll kill me. She goes on the internet and she knows where all the places are and all that.
She's a foodie, huh? She likes to not. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun, though. She's good.
It is. Yeah. Until the bill comes. And it's just like, Jesus.
Can I break a window?
It's not fucking worth it. No. We went out the other night. Once a month, I go out we'll go out and it'll be just like some. Yeah. It's fucking brutal. If you can tell by me stuttering, we just went out to a steak place the other night. It was fucking delicious. But the bill was really annoying.
Two people is like 280 something.
It was brutal. Yeah. It was brutal. And did I bring it up to her? I think I brought it up to her and she got mad and said it was tacky.
I tell you, when I was just in Ohio, we went to a really nice restaurant and we went to the bar first and we ordered a round of drinks for like 4 of us. And, you know, I get the credit card out. I only had like 20 bucks on me, my credit card. Right. So I go and I'm waiting. I'm like, oh, this is going to be a credit card situation. It came up $16 for like 5 drinks. I'm like, oh, my geez.
That's what it should be.
L.A. would have been a $60 drink order at the minimum. Yeah, and I'm not a cheap guy, but I'm moving here.
And there used to be dive bars out here, but all the fucking hipsters, they take over every one of them.
And now the dive bars are more expensive than the upscale bars.
It's brutal. So I want to make sure that I don't forget to promote everything. So this is actually just for me because like I was saying earlier, just as far as how you're making money outside of this business, I just think that gives you such an unbelievable amount of power where if you have this income coming in, if the acting work slows down just for a little bit, like when they come at you and, you know, with the movie where you got to be in drag, you only have to do it if you want to.
Yeah.
Where like you see a lot of these guys now because I guess it's more before we talk about the Fat Sales thing, like in your time in the movies, like the last 10 years in the movie, like the whole movie industry now with the, I'm not even going to say the name of the websites where you can watch it for free. It's like, it's doing to the movie business what happened to the music business.
100%.
Yeah. So now, like, for, you know, people outside the business listening right now, basically how it works now is movies that have the best chance, correct me if I'm wrong, are like low budget independent things or those $100 million robot superhero movies.
The in-between, which is all the movies that we probably grew up loving, you know, the Stand By Me's, those coming-of-age kind of movies, those in-betweens are almost not obsolete, like we don't enjoy them, but studios aren't making them because their business is like $2, $3 million or less or $100 million or more. And that in-between gap is actually proving not to be the least profitable business. And I think those are the better movies, personally. But you hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, because I was sitting there one night and I saw like the probably like the 15th A-list movie star
signed on to do a TV series. It's probably why all these TV series are so unbelievable now. It's like something. It's like it really is like the second golden age of television. Like some of the stuff that's out there, and I'm really far behind. People keep telling me I got to see Fargo, and there's
I'm on like season three of Breaking Bad.
Oh, you
that's
are.
That's how far behind I am.
Oh, yeah.
And like season one of House of Cards, I'm real behind.
Yeah, I started watching The Killing. I liked that. I watched the first two seasons of that. House of Cards, I watched the first episode. I was like, I love this. And then, you know, my life got busy and I haven't got back to that. So
and you got to pay attention for that one. You can't like eat the popcorn and you got to lock in on that one.
Yeah.
You can't really casually watch House of Cards.
Absolutely. So all these guys now, you see, like, I mean, you see half the cast of like Boogie Nights and all these movies I love. They're all on TV now. So with it changing like that, that's why I love this move. I mean, and you did the most riskiest thing is essentially opening a restaurant, right? And how did that all come about?
It came about because the Sal of Fat Sal's is a real guy. He's one of my best friends I know from New York. We always talked when we were young. I'm talking 20 years old out here. Like, we need like an East Coast kind of place out here. We didn't know what it was. And then obviously, you know, he wasn't in the entertainment business, though. He's a mechanical engineer, like builds buildings.
Right.
And he kind of ended that part of his career. And him and another friend of mine came to me with this whole plan. And look, I don't know. I'm like Paulie and Goodfellas. Like, I don't know anything about the restaurant business.
Right.
I really genuinely don't. I don't cook.
What does that want from me?
I know how to sit down. I know how to eat. It's exactly how that conversation went. And, you know, they put
together
a plan.
You're going to burn it down someday and Sal's going to be, it's a fucking shame. It's
place
a fucking
got
shame.
Struck by lightning? Yeah, fuck you. Pay me. No, so I invested in the two of them. I said, guys, I don't know about food. I know most restaurants fail, but not that I feel like I owed, but like if I can't empower one of my best friends, because I'm a lucky motherfucker right now, if I can't give him a shot, why not? I went into it saying, I'm going to lose every dollar. So I wrote a check that I was comfortable losing every cent of.
Right.
And sure enough, the kid came through and I don't run the business.
Right.
I'm not going there making sandwiches. I'm in on everything. I know what's going on, but they run that show and we just opened our fourth one in Austin, Texas.
Dude, you got to update your bio. You're killing it so much. They told me you had two locations. Now you got four. Well, you had to be comfortable if your buddy knew how to build and design a building that he could make a sandwich. I mean, that's got to be a joke.
Yeah, but he also built out the places because of his background. And the other guy, Josh of Fat Sal's, who he's the one I think came up with that we're making sandwiches over here.
Right.
You know, he's been in the food industry his whole life. So they were the team. And I said, I'm betting on you guys because the first one was at UCLA, Westwood.
Great
the first
location.
Spot. And I said, they have a great way of making everyone feel like it's your spot, like you're a VIP. I'm like, these kids are gonna come to hang out with you. To and right. Sure enough, I hate to say I told you so. I was right about that, and then but they took it from there and have just
You guys with that that flood, did anything come down your way?
Not luckily out? Not ours, but I mean we certainly felt some of the effects of it, but it didn't hit our spot. But
For people listening all over, there was a water main break.
crazy
yeah, like one of those 10-foot pipes you could drive a truck through.
Yeah.
Broke. Yeah, you know, it's not no big deal. We just steal the water here.
Little things. You know, we have so much water in LA anyway.
So tell me about this. I'm jumping all around.
No, it's okay.
I'm scatterbrained here, but so this Arturo Gatti movie. Now, is this going to be? It's going to go all the way. Obviously, going to go the. I don't want to ruin the end of the movie, but I know how his life ends.
Right, and that's the thing.
Which is really sort of like open ended as to whether. Was it officially ruled like a suicide?
It was officially ruled a suicide. Arturo Gatti, after he retired, you know, he went to Brazil and with his wife at the time, they were going to, and the kid, and he was found dead. And the government there ruled it. It was ruled a suicide. His wife was actually in jail on trial for the murder, and she was right. Not
acquitted.
Guilty,
okay.
Acquitted, and now she's back here. You know, while we will not be able to literally make the movie and say she killed him,
right.
The goal of the movie, without giving away all too much, is if we tell this guy's story correctly, you as an audience member will be able to walk out saying, there's no no fucking way he hung himself with a pocketbook strap from the staircase and ended up under the island of the kitchen. Like, I have the reports. It's mind-blowing the way they say it went down. So this movie's being made because his longtime manager to Pat Lynch, great guy. He's actually in the documentary a lot, the Gaddy Ward Tale, the HBO documentary that Wahlberg voiced over. And
One of the greatest fights of the last...
Oh, man.
Was that last century? Was that already the 90s? Like, 98?
No, I think it was early 2000. I think it was 2002 was the first fight. And I remember I watched that fight live. It was at Mohegan Sun. 2,000 people there. And Jim Lampley actually says in the fight, man, he's like, man, I bet you these 2,000 people did not realize they were walking into maybe the best fight they'll ever see
in
their life.
Oh, wait, you were at the fight?
No, he was commentating the fight. And he was just saying, he's looking around the small little arena, 2,000 people. He's like, I bet the 2,000 people
I'm saying,
here.
Are you watching it on a big screen or are you at the fight?
No, I was watching it at home.
Oh, okay.
Here, probably on break from working at Boston Market, probably watching the fight with some mac and cheese. And, Mark played Mickey Ward in The Fighter, and it's a great movie, and I love Mickey Ward as well. And, you know, they weren't at a place really to get into the Gaddy Ward stuff, so I think this is kind of – that's why Mark wanted to be involved is that's the next step is showing that bromance, the ultimate bromance of Arturo and Mickey Ward.
Right. And there's all those movies, boxing movies, is just, I mean, I'm a sucker for those. Like, that to me, that's like the modern day Western. Like, when I was a kid, I used to always watch Westerns with my dad because he loved those. And then, I look at the Rocky movies, they started off good. They got a little crazy, but you know what was cool about the Rocky, all of them, was the premise of each story. Like, I can't even remember which one. There was so many of them.
I'm an expert. Talk to me.
The Russian one was
Rocky
a little
four.
That was a little ridiculous. But the one where he's coming back, like, he's lost all his money.
Is that six? Rocky five.
That's five.
See, Tommy Morrison.
Yeah, and what I loved about that, I'm not saying, you know...
He goes back to Philly.
What I love about that one is just the premise of it, that they aged the character... with Stallone. Like, I thought they did a really good job, and they kind of did like a good trajectory of it. I'm not saying they executed it. This is what you got to do nowadays, because there's so many fucking people out there that are going to take, you actually think that's a good fucking movie? I'm just saying, like, with the jump off point for where they were going with that. Dude, that's hilarious. You watched all of those. I watched all the Friday.
Let's also take a moment and realize one thing about how far we've come. If we tried to make Rocky 1 now, the love story part with Rocky and Rocky essentially rapes Adrian when he has her at the house.
That's right.
She tries to get out. He slams the door, and then he puts his arms up on the pipe, and the wife he won't let her leave. She's trying to leave. She's like, "Let me go," and he's like, "No, where you go? No, you gotta stay." He basically date rapes Adrian, doesn't let her leave.
Yeah, there's a
you
lot
watch
of
it
that.
Now. It's like, dude, let her go. She doesn't want to be there.
There's a lot of that back in the day. I guess I shouldn't be laughing at this. It's just fucking just the fact that you won the Oscar. Did it also win?
I think it won Best Picture, Best Screenplay. I think it was almost a sweep.
Jesus Christ, I forgot all. I thought that all that shit was in the 50s.
You got to be. Are you a that, you that love whole, sports
get a hold
movies?
Of yourself where they'd slap the shit out of them? Like, I thought that was just in the 50s.
Are you a sports movie guy or no?
Some of them I like, and I if they're done in a way, if they're not too cliched, it's very hard at this point.
Now it's almost impossible.
I'll have issues, like, say, that movie Rudy. Loved the story, loved it and all of that. But when you saw the actor they picked, and then in the end they showed the real guy, you saw the real guy. And even though he's small, you look at him like, dude, that guy's a fucking animal, man. I would not want that guy running at me. Like, I can see how that guy had a heart of a lion. But just, you know.
Do you know how hard I would have fought if they were making that movie right now to play Rudy? I would have been Sean Astin head-to-head battle. I would have, oh, my Lord. I would have did steroids for that movie.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. Nowadays they're not that bad. You do one cycle.
I go as Rudy every Halloween. That's my Halloween. I got to put on a Notre Dame jacket and I hold a Bible.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do. That's my go-to. That and Schneider from One Day at a Time.
Dude, so you basically, you love acting the way I love stand-up.
100%. I don't know about you, but acting was just my way into movies and TV. I couldn't have easily been an editor And right. I would have been almost equally as happy. Yeah, I wouldn't have had a lot of cool stories that I have now with acting, but it was something in TV or movies, whatever it was. And acting was what I landed on.
Well, speaking of that type of stuff, meeting all these people, all those years and all those seasons on Entourage, who was your favorite guest star? Because you guys had some monsters on that show.
God, and I know people always try to take a high road. They don't want to single out one person. I'm not doing
that. Give me a handful, whatever. Give me.
I mean, I love James Cameron only because I think he like legitimized the fake world that we created.
Right.
Like James Cameron on the show was directing Aquaman, and so right. When he came on, he legitimized our fake world, our fake universe. But I mean, I loved like Bob Saget. We had the whole cast of Full House at one point. We had Dice on there.
Dice was great.
Dice was phenomenal. And if you had told me when I was a little kid sneaking the Dice tapes with my brother, listening to him, that I'd be acting with Andrew Dice Clay, I would have punched you in the nuts.
No, people don't understand the impact that guy had, how big he was. I saw Dice Clay at the Worcester Centrum. This is Celtics could have done a home game if they wanted to. I was like second to last row in the upper deck, and he came out and destroyed. And in the end, he did his impressions, and then I swear to God, he played a drum solo. I'm not even lying. Like this, it was like he could do no wrong. And it's so hard now with all the internet and all the fucking podcasts and all this shit for somebody to have an impact and get that big. And that's one of the...
His son is one of the best drummers I've ever seen. His son, Max.
He told me he was unreal.
His son is unreal on the drums. Knock your head off with the drums.
There you go. Random point.
I always describe it like this. Like, we had one day on Entourage where I don't think any other show would ever do this. On the call sheet, 6 a.m. call. At 6 a.m., we were working with Sidney Pollack, great actor, director. And then after lunch, we were doing a scene with Kanye West. It's like, wherever are you going to, in one day, are you going to do scenes with Sidney Pollack in the morning and Kanye West in the afternoon? That was one of the coolest parts of the
job. That's awesome. How crazy is Bob Saget?
I love him. I'm obsessed with him. And he did something really cool. My nephew, who's now watching Full House, my mom bought him all the DVDs. It's his favorite show. He's 5 years old. He wants to call me Uncle Jesse. He asked me. He's like, can I call you Uncle Jesse instead of Uncle Jerry? I'm like, yeah, sure. So I tweeted that. And Bob, he must follow me and wrote, like, DM me, like, look, if the kid's ever in town, bring him to Fat Sal's. I'll come meet him. Like, Bob, if my nephew sees the real, he might see the first 5-year-old heart attack of all ever. Yeah. He might just fall on the floor. So, you know, he's a great guy.
I did a benefit with Saget last week, and that guy, he's out of his fucking mind.
Love him.
He goes on stage, and he starts wishing the disease we're trying to stop. He's wishing the disease on the club owner. And it's the funniest, 5 minutes I've seen in a while. And the crowd's all, uncomfortable and squirmy. There's, of course, a couple of people that get it, that he's just joking around. But he goes up, and he just goes up and riffs. So he'll talk himself into a hole, and he just keeps digging it. He doesn't try to get out. He tries to dig all the way through and come out the other side down in China. And that's what he did. He felt him going, and he just kept... He's out of his mind. It's one of my favorite comics to watch because of that style, and then also because of all the people that watched Full House, and they still think there's going to be this.
And America's Funniest Home Videos.
Yeah, that there's going to be this.
Forget that.
Yeah, this family sort of like entertainment kind of thing.
Last quick Bob thing, and Doug Allen actually said, the creator of Entourage, I said this on my podcast, when he went to Bob Saget to do the show, Doug wanted to play Bob as broke, right. Living somewhere. And Bob's like, look, Doug, I'll do one thing I won't do. I won't play broke.
Right.
Because I won't play. So Doug was like, all right, well, what about, would you like have sex with prostitutes? He's like, yes, done easily, but I won't play broke. He would not play down on his luck broke Bob, but he's like,
why not?
I'll have sex with prostitutes. Yeah, of course.
Oh, because he just thought it was
he just didn't want to do it. That was his one, I'm not playing broke because it just doesn't fit with what I do.
That's also, that's probably a smart move too, because so many people would think that he actually did that. Where if you just do the prostitute thing,
it like fits with his comedy a little bit, yeah. I guess. Like, and if you know him, you know, you don't really take that seriously, but you maybe kind of wonder in the back of your mind, like, wait, maybe.
No, he's great. You know, Jesus, all these memories are coming back. I was walking my dog, and there's a house that I walked by that you guys, I didn't even realize I was watching a rerun, and you guys shot with Ralph Macchio there.
Oh, and, God. Yeah. Yes.
A few people
like Kevin Dillon, too.
Yeah. And of course, you know, Ralph was hilarious. And every time, I swear to God, like I walked by that thing like 15 times. Every time I go by it, like 9 times out of the 15, I'll be like,
we asked him to do the
Ralph
crane.
Ralph Macchio stood right in
we
that doorway.
We asked him to do the crane. He shut us down on the crane kick.
What is that? Oh,
the famous Daniel LaRusso crane kick at the end that he hits Johnny with. We said, will you do the crane? He's like, no, won't do it.
And you only asked once, right?
Oh, yeah. Out of respect, of course. You asked once, he says no. We really tried to never make anyone uncomfortable. If a cameo came on, like, they really had control of how far they wanted. Yeah, it was never done. Like, you're in on the joke. We're not trying to make you look like a dick. If you're uncomfortable, either don't do it or we'll change it. Doug was always great about that.
That's awesome. Well, I had an awesome time finally getting to meet. I know I met you briefly, but I'm really happy for all your success here. But we didn't really get to talk too much about your podcast. Is it just you? Is it going to be like another?
It's just me, but I do have guests.
It's got to be heavy sports. I'm got to be guessing.
It is. You know, I'm trying right now not to, because it is the dog days of summer, and you know, there's no football, there's no hoops.
That's
so
brutal.
I'm every time I every show at some point I say I'm not going to talk about sports, because the minute, you know, October comes around, it's probably going to transition into that a lot.
Oh, absolutely.
So, but we're doing some fun sports things. We got, like, the Sports Academy Awards. I'm doing this one thing where we're going to, like, do the best sports movies never made. So, and I want my audience, we're going
to
cast.
I would listen to that.
Well, I'd love to get your take on this, too. We're going to cast the 86 Mets. That movie.
Oh, Jesus.
Let's cast. But I'm doing that one on the show next week. I think where we cast the 86 one. Mets. A little teaser.
You know, Denzel,
Gary Carter.
Denzel, if he was a little younger, would have been a great Daryl Strawberry.
I got the best Daryl Strawberry.
Who? Did he have his little?
I'll tease it with this
okay,
one.
Okay.
All right. To me, it's a genius call. I don't know how you're going to react.
Okay.
And only because of what he looks like now.
Okay.
Dave Chappelle is Daryl Strawberry. Because he's jacked right now, isn't he? The pictures I've seen of Chappelle, he's like.
He's
huge.
No, I saw him when he was in Seattle. He is.
He's like a big boy.
Yeah.
I would cast him as Daryl.
Across the room at this point.
I would cast him as Daryl.
Oh,
but we could have fun with it. I mean, Lenny Dykstra. Who's going to play Lenny Dykstra? Mookie Wilson. Dwight Gooden.
Gary Carter.
Keith Hernandez.
Oh, these are bringing up some bad memories. You know, I wish we didn't play them in 86. I really would have enjoyed that team more because...
Yeah.
I saw so many things on there. Just the unbelievable, like just the level of talent that was on that team was insane. And you know, obviously, what happened when we ran into them, we had those fuckers beat. Ugh.
That book too. If you ever want to read it,
I watched that so little. I don't even remember the names. Like, I can't even remember who was the guy who ran across the home plate and he put his hands on his helmet. Like, oh my god,
I think that was Lee Mazzilli.
Why did I think it was Knight? I'm thinking
maybe it was Knight. My initial mind is telling me Mazzilli, but that's not a fact.
Behind the bag, they fucking showed that forever. I still love Vin Scully, but every once in a while, when I'm watching a Dodgers game, listening to him, his voice will get up into that register, and that's all I'm hearing.
Could you imagine?
And the Mets
if
win
that
it.
Happened now with social media. What the hell? That would set social media. It would break Twitter. If that happened right now, Twitter would have to shut down their whatever. I don't know anything about technology, but whatever they use, that shit would break if Bill Buckner happened right now.
Oh, and he, like, Bill Buckner, actually, back then, before social media, he had to leave Boston. And he, you know, he was upset, and he talked about it, too. And I was kind of like, I felt bad for him on one level. But on another level, it's like, dude, you know, what do you we haven't won it in this long.
What'd you think was going to happen?
You know, it hit a pebble or something. I don't know. It's like, but you know, when it's a little slow roller, what do you think?
But did he expect compassion?
I don't know.
Did he really expect compassion?
Well, I know you should get some compassion for his fucking Bob Stanley. That's who should give him. You should send him a fucking card every week that he took that off of him or whoever it was. I see. I never watched the game again.
Don't go there, Bill. There's no reason to go there.
One time I watched some highlights, and we had that Calvin Schiraldi in there, and it was just single.
Don't go,
dude. It was the sickest
thing. You're gonna start getting cold sweats.
Yeah, no. But it's fine because we've won all these championships. But there's just something about that one. That one hurt. That was because I was 18 when that happened.
That's
when
your Buck, pride.
When Bill Buckner happened, I was 10. So I didn't even know that we hadn't won it that long, and I knew the Yankees had won some championships, but I was too young to get it. But by 86, I got it, and you'd think the Celtics won it that year. Patriots went to the Super Bowl. We got the shit kicked out of us.
Right, but it was looking good for Boston sports.
That was foreshadowing this past 10 years. We kind of got it all at once, but anyways, hey, I'm really happy for you, man. All the success and the highest compliment, man. Back in the day, it was really hard to go from a television show where you were so known as a character, especially if it had like a nickname or something like that, to then be going on to doing the stuff that you're doing. You're playing this Arturo Gatti. I think it's going to lead to great things. You got all these sandwiches places. You're killing it. And you got a podcast, and I'm helping you promote it on my own podcast. You want to talk about bad for fucking business?
Bill,
that right there.
I cannot thank you enough, though, for having me. I've been a fan for quite a while. I actually, when I met you that night at the Knicks screening, we saw a screening for the Knicks film.
Michael Rappaport's
film he directed.
Which is great, by the way.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Well, what's it called again?
When the Garden Was Eden.
Yeah, which is based on a book, right?
It's based on a book when the Knicks were actually good, which I don't know. Right. See, it's similar to you. I'm like that with the Knicks. I just have no idea. They're just losers to me.
But weren't you old enough for Pat Riley? Those the early 90s.
Yeah, but losing game 6 and 7 to the Rockets. John Starks going 2 for 17. The joke was John Starks tried to shoot himself after the game, but he missed.
Oh,
it was that was my gen. Patrick Ewing missing the finger. Reggie Miller scoring 8 points in 20 seconds.
Oh, and then did the choke thing.
Yeah, I feel your pain.
Oh, sorry.
But I'm glad.
You know
I got
what?
To
if you're
you.
A fan long enough, you got those fucking stories.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, yes.
But anyways, I hope what little I can do on this podcast, I hope makes Bad for Business a big hit out there. And congratulations on this Arturo Gatti thing, man. I can't wait. And I'm going to hit your fat cells pretty soon.
Oh, you're VIP now, yeah. Bill. You're VIP now.
All right, Jerry. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks, man.
All right.